They change cultures. They're heat seekers. They run at adversity and embrace change. These are the Room Tilters.
Somebody who can change the temperature in a room when they walk in. I mean, that's metaphorical for somebody who can influence those around them and make such an impact quickly, emphatically, and long-lasting, whether it be an organization, a team, a relationship, whatever it might be.
This is the Room Tilters podcast, presented by Limitless Minds. Co-hosts DJ Eitzen and Harry Wilson, founders of peak performance and leadership consulting company, Limitless Minds, explore how the best and brightest change the temperature in a room. From sports, the military, entertainment and media, clinical psychologists to CEOs, this podcast will navigate what it takes to think big and go far. And now, DJ and Harry.
So on today's Room Tilters podcast, we have Clinton Sparks, who is a Grammy-nominated multi-platinum record producer and publisher responsible for selling a ton of records, like 75, 80 million, something like that. He's done a little bit of everything. He's an author. He's a father. He's got some good stories today that, you know, we kind of got into it with him on a number of different things. He shared a lot of nuggets. DJ, like, what did you think, man? Like, what should listeners be expecting and looking forward to?
You know, I think what I love about his journey is that whether he talks about, you know, himself as a kid, where he's at now, or where he's going, there's so many cool stories, anecdotes that he puts throughout. I love the Puff Daddy story at the end, that they'll, you know, so stay, you know, listen to the whole entire thing. But he's got some incredible stories around how his mindset and how focused he is helps him create the kind of results that he wants to do. He doesn't wish for anything. If he sees something, he goes and gets it. You know, he has a book that's out that you'll hear more about throughout the podcast. But what an incredible guest, man. He kicks some serious knowledge on the show today.
Yeah, I mean, he also talks about caring, right? For him, it seems like the quality or the characteristic of a room tilter in his world is somebody who cares, somebody who has empathy, love, and all that, and kind of the things that bring people together. So I'm excited for the listeners to check it out. Enjoy. Listen, man, we're on the Room Tilters podcast today. We got a special guest. We're really excited, man. We got Clinton Sparks. You know, DJ was super nervous. I'm going to tell you why. Because DJ thinks he can spit and rap and all this other stuff. So he was super nervous. And
I thought this was my time to shine, man. You know what I'm saying?
He did. But we were talking about how, honestly, we were talking about how much of a, like, we were like, dude, we're about to have a beast on this podcast. So let's step up our game. And so he got real nervous. But it's a treat, man. But for the audience that doesn't know Clinton, this man's a pioneer, right? So in the hip hop and music industry, Grammy nominated, multi-platinum producer, DJ, songwriter, entrepreneur, a father, an author, How to Win Big in the Music Business, 75 million records sold. And you know, Clinton, we always talk about how success leaves clues. So this type of success doesn't happen by accident. So we're trying to get a little sneak peek into you know, what kind of shaped some of this. And we know it's not all good stuff. It's not all easy. The path is difficult. So we want to kind of hear a little bit about it. But before we get into it, first, how are you doing, man? How's 2020 treating you? It's been a grind for most of us. How are you holding up, man?
Well, you know, I've persevered through any trying time because of the way that I've built and designed my life and my career since I started. So 2020 is no different. I've always had multiple streams of income. I've always had bulletproof businesses. I've been esports and gaming for the past 3 years. So I've kind of been one of the leaders in intersecting the music business and the gaming business. So I was running business development for the biggest esports brand in the world. And I brought in some of the biggest celebrity investors from Offset, Sway Lee, Pitbull, Yo Gotti, DJ Paul, into esports. Then brought in some big brands from the NFL to Bear Brick to Champion. So, you know, I've really played a significant role in pushing the gaming and esports industry more into the mainstream and connecting other culturally relevant sectors and industries to esports and gaming. So that's been a business that's been thriving during COVID, because everybody's on the internet and everybody's gaming. So, you know, it's always, look, I had no idea there was going to be a pandemic, but I'm always thinking the way I operate is like, okay, this will work in this world. This works in this world. This works in this world. This makes money here. This makes money. So if this industry collapses, no problem. Got these three things going on. If this business fails, no problem. These three things are going on. So I've kind of always done that since I started when I was young. So I've never really, even DJing, like there was a point where, you know, even 2008, you know, when everything was collapsing, like everyone still wanted to party. Everyone still wanted, you know what I mean? So yeah, it didn't affect the nightlife industry. You know what I mean? So, you know, and I've always, I built my first e-commerce website in 2004. It was the world's biggest mixtape in kind of street wear website. It was called mixunit.com. And, you know, most people know me as a DJ and a producer, but I've built multiple multi-million dollar businesses. And unless you know me, you wouldn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many people I do interviews with, or it'll probably happen on this podcast. What happens is, like, people know me for this success, but really my music success was an intentional vehicle for me to open doors to build other businesses. Because I know that everyone wants to be down with the cool. And I know music is the cool. So if I'm over here doing cool shit, it now opens the doors for me to be sitting on top floors of JP Morgan World Headquarters, or talking with the chairman of NBC Universal, or hanging out with the CEO of Yahoo, because I'm there because of music. But then when I open my mouth and I make suggestions about how to better run their business, or money they're leaving on the table, or opportunities that they're not seeing, they all, I've got this one line I've got a million times in my life. You ready? Aren't you a DJ? You know what I mean? And then,
I get that all the time too, man. You know?
Like, it's one of the things that I do. And then it always ends up being in a meeting with them and then turning into something great and then closing big, you know, seven-figure deals. Happens all the time. So the point of this book, even though it's How to Win Big in the Music Business, forwards written by Damon John from the Shark Tank, which we all know.
Yeah.
Damon's not going to co-sign or write a giant forward in a book unless he believes in the product, and that product happens to be me. Yeah. Right? So, like, even though this book is How to Win Big in the Music Business, the principles and the values in this book are transferable to any industry, including your own personal relationship and development. I just called it the music business because it's the Trojan horse to get me into the world of self-development and self-help. Because really, I'm giving you the medicine in the baby food, because everybody wants to do music, right? So, like, the DIY independent artist industry is going to be a $2 billion industry by the end of next year, and there's no Gary Vee or Grant Cardone of the music business. So I decided I'll be that, because I can be. You know what I mean? So it's really just a stepping stone to getting to bigger and better things. I'm going to put out books like I put out mixtapes.
I love it, man. I love it. So that sizzle, right, that really attracts people, and obviously you've built and you have a strong foundation in business. What's your favorite business venture thus far, like that you're in or that you've been in? Is it the DJing? Is it one of the other businesses that you have?
Well, I got to tell you, it would be whack if I didn't say music, right? Because music's my passion. But I got to tell you, esports and gaming is what my brain has been waiting for, because the way that I operate, there's no industry that can quite keep up or understand how broad and big my brain thinks, right? So when I got into esports and gaming, I'm like, holy shit, there's no rules. It's limitless. You can do anything. You can bring in any kind of brand. And what I'm good at doing, or what I've excelled at doing throughout my career, is making people understand things that they, one, don't understand or don't even know that they need to understand. Mm-hmm. And opening up their brain to realizing, holy shit, this is a massive opportunity I can capitalize on that I didn't even know existed, nor did I know how to get involved with it. Clinton just walked me through this very simplistically.
Right.
So that, you know, the gaming and esports is like, you can tie in music, you can tie in fashion, you can tie in fitness, you can tie in real athletes, you can tie in esports athletes, you can brands, like there's so many things, platforms. I'm talking to the biggest brands and platforms in the world about bringing them in and creating activations that no one even thought of. You could put me in a room with JetBlue and Rick Ross and Johnson & Johnson and Wells Fargo. And everybody would be in the room and be like, this room makes no sense. Why are we all here? And I'm the one that could say, no, you need to know this about him. You can capitalize on this from him. You need him to help you get to them. And da-da-da. And I can package it all up and then present it and show you how to execute it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, and that kind of leads us into the next question. And your trajectory of your career is insane. And you know, even just from what, you know, we've been able to gather, and then obviously you've mentioned many more things. What's the one character trait that you feel like is it this connector thing that you're talking about, or what's that one character trait that you think sets you apart or has helped you get to where you're at now?
Caring about other people. One of the things I say in my book is, if you feel accomplished or triumphant, like, I know you guys, you were saying you had something to do with selling pharmaceutical devices and stuff, right?
Yep.
So you're in sales, right? And if you feel triumphant or like you won or accomplished because you were able to convince somebody to buy something, invest in something, or do something that's not impacting for them or super valuable, and you feel great about that, that doesn't make you a great salesman. It makes you a con artist. So I think that when you're able to understand the person you're selling to and understand what it is they need, why they need it, and then even open up their eyes to making them understand why they need it because they didn't understand in the first place. That's what, and by the way, doing it with care. I'm not going to sell you something that I know you don't need or that's whack just so I can jock off on my board. I just made another sale. You know what I mean? Because like in the long run, that's going to hurt me. It's going to hurt my business. It's going to hurt my relationship. It's going to hurt my reputation. So I built a reputation off being authentic, off doing the right thing, off of caring about people, and off of like finding opportunities for people and can showing them why this is great for their career. I mean, the biggest obstacle I've had in my entire life, I probably spent more time in my career trying to convince people why something's the right thing for them to do. You know, because a lot of times people don't understand it, they don't get it, and they're comfortable, they want familiarity, they're scared about something different. I don't know if they don't trust themselves, if they're not, if it's scared money or whatever it is, but like, if you know what you're doing and what the person's saying makes sense, mm-hmm. then you need to go for it, man.
Well, you know, and I think that, you know, in following you, man, you know, I also know that mindset, right, which is a kind of a big, broad term, you know, that cliche of mindset is everything, but I can tell that mindset, like us, is important to you. You know what I mean? And it's probably played a role in your success. And you know, all of us, I think, should have a philosophy when it comes to, you know, how you think about your mindset. Like, what's your philosophy from a mindset perspective, and how has it played a role?
My personality and my mindset has been the nucleus of my success. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, I can give you many plethora of examples. But yeah, like even my book, the book isn't going to sit here and say, here's how you upload your song to Spotify. You know what I mean? It's not like that. This book is the mentality and the psychology that's necessary to win. You know, understanding how to pivot, understanding how to communicate, understanding how to network, understanding how to create sustainability, scalability. You know, one of the things I talk about in here too is making a plan. So if you ask somebody, the average person, whether it's an athlete or a rapper or an actor or anybody, most people say, I want to be rich, or I want to be successful, I want to be famous, I want to be, right? A couple of things people don't think about is, like, why? Do you think that if you're rich or you're famous, it gets rid of, like, all your worries and fears and nightmares and problems? So that's one thing you got to really assess. Two, it's great if you want to be that, but do you have a practical, realistic plan to get there? And I think that's where people make the mistake. They just think if they just kind of run through like a wrecking ball and just put in the work and like hustle and like no sleep and all these things, it's like all of a sudden the more no sleep, the more hustling, the more I'm going to make it. And it's like, no, you could fucking sleep all you fucking want if you've got a right plan and you're focused and committed to that plan. And one of the most important parts of having a solid plan is planning for failure.
Yeah,
which is what a lot of people don't do, because if you don't plan for failure, then you're not prepared for it when it happens. If you plan for it, you're prepared and you know how to get through it. A lot of people look at things as like, you know, like a speed bump, right? What's a speed bump? It's a momentary time of slowing down. It doesn't stop you from going the way you're going. It's just a momentary slowdown. And that's really what failures are. They're just speed bumps, man. They're not roadblocks. You know, it's not the end of your plan. And that's what a lot of people kind of look at it like, or they get too caught up in things not working out the way they thought it was supposed to work out in their brain, that they didn't plan on how to pivot or go differently if something unexpected happens.
Right. And I love it, man. I'm glad you mentioned that, because in your book, you talk about mastering art. Tell people what that means, because it might not be what they think. And I think that aligns with kind of just what you're talking about.
Right. Mastering art means automatic, resourceful thinking. And what that means is, for instance, in my career, anytime something bad happens, whether it's personal, business, whatever, I don't sit and say, oh, fuck, everything's ruined. Or what are we going to do now? I literally immediately think, all right, who can help me? How do I get this fixed? Who do I have a contact with that can connect me to something else? How did this break in the first place? What's the problems? So, and that's automatic resourceful thinking. The second your brain automatically starts thinking about resources mm-hmm. on how to resolve, or how to fix or how to alleviate something, you're right back on track. You know what I mean? So, and people spend more time worrying or complaining or getting mad at, you know, haters or someone that didn't help them or someone that got in the way or hating on them, or, you know, a pandemic happened,
right?
Or like some shit that's unexpected. Somebody dies. You know, your partner dies that knew how to do all the techs out of your business and you were doing the sales. And you're like, fuck, what do I do now? I don't understand what he understood. Right. Well, that's your problem because you didn't prepare. You know what I mean? So like, and most people don't do that.
No, it's so true.
But if you do it, you're way better off in life, man. And that's one of the keys to success.
Yeah, I love that. Art. I love that. And, you know, we at Limitless Minds, the company that we founded, we talk a lot about neutral thinking. It has a lot of similarities. Neutral is like you're just dealing in facts. What are the facts of the situation? Like you mentioned COVID, you know, the situation is not great, right? But it is what it is. How do we go from where we're at here and look at the environment and then get the behaviors that will then ultimately drive the performance? Where I think a lot of people freeze up in times of adversity and challenge, and or they look back, you know, man, I can't wait till it gets the way they used to be. And guys like you, you guys are always looking forward thinking, trying to find solutions and put connections together so that you can optimize that moment in time. So
I don't think it's ever going to get back to what it used to be. I think the world is going to change and it's never, ever going to be what it used to be. In fact, right. I think it's probably going to get worse.
Right.
So, you know, and if people are holding on to the past and like, just kind of like, all right, I'm going to just stand here until it gets back to good, then you're in for a rude awakening. Because it's not going to get back to that point. I mean, these doors have been kicked open. You know what I mean? Like, you can't shut them again. Like, racism is real. And it's bigger than, like, some of us even knew.
Right.
I didn't even realize there was that many races, like, in America. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, holy shit.
Where'd they come from?
You know, especially in, like, sports and music. Like, because it's such, like, tight-knit communities and it's so multiracial that we're almost in our own bubble of, like, because we're all cool. We all get along. We don't, we rag on each other's, like, you know, stereotypical things, and like no one's offended by it,
right?
Because we all love each other and we mean well, you know what I mean? So like when shit happens, like us three right now on the phone, we could just rag on each other and say some like shit that someone else could be just like, oh my god, he's super racist.
Yeah,
it's like, we're just growing up. But like now, and that's sports and kind of like music and stuff, and now like even those bubbles have been popped. You know what I mean? So now you're out in the real world. Like I'm nervous about typical things I would say to one of my black friends that I could never say now because someone's going to be like, oh man, he's low key racist.
Yeah. It's like,
are you serious? I'm a racist. You know what I mean? But it's like, and I hate that we're in that world, but I think that we all have to be way more sensitive nowadays, and it's going to be in the future. We all have to be way more cognizant of like everything from women to race to gender to it's not like, it's never going to go back to where you could have like these private group jokes. Mm-hmm. And like, because now social media, the eyes on everybody, you and your brother could be hanging out together and just say something off the cuff. Yeah. If the wrong person hears that, all of a sudden you're in scrutiny.
It's on Twitter.
And it's like, dude, you know he's not that kind of guy. Right. You're just being a troublemaker right now. True. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what the internet does, man. It's just full of troublemakers. And it's never going to go away. Right. You know what I mean? So it's only going to get worse. So we all have to make drastic changes now on how we operate our lives. Even personally, and even like, you know, in Boston, we say words in Boston that are so like ignorant, but they're just so normal if you grew up in Boston that you call each other those names when they do something dumb. You know what I mean? Like, you can never do that shit now.
2020, man. It's 2020.
Oh my God, right?
Yeah, be careful out there.
By the way, there's good to that too, because it's making people do the right thing and not say things that are insensitive. You know what I mean? And maybe what was normal, maybe it should have never been normal.
Or even just like it's making people understand the genesis of where some of these things came from, right? Like, and I think the history behind certain things, it's like, oh, like I didn't realize, what was it? What we were talking about, somebody said something about selling somebody up the river or down the river or whatever. And like, do you know the history behind that? You know, it's like things that just were common, you know, like you're like, oh, yeah, that is off. Or I played basketball at Capital University, which they're the Capital Crusaders, and they're looking at changing their name, and they're like, why would they change their name? Well, you know, the Crusades killed millions of people, you know what I mean? And like, that's not something that they want to hang their hat on. So it is interesting. But to your point though, Clinton, it's like, I think that people like you though are comfortable with, okay, it has changed. Now let's just move forward and figure out what the new environment entails. And then how do I navigate through it and be successful in that?
I don't want to be part of the people that figure it out. I want to be part of the people that design it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always been my whole life. So, and that's part of like my doing social good. That's trying to help the youth. So like, you know, my whole career, I've watched athletes, rappers, influencers, YouTubers just get used for their talent. And then when they're not, there's no purpose for them anymore, spit out. And then we go on to the next athlete or rapper, right? And there's never been programs or organizations or people that really, and this is what I'm doing with my esports organization, we'll call it Exet, get familiar. And what I vow to do, first of all, we're the first esports organization that's aimed at diversity and inclusion. It's one of our main missions and goals. Uh-huh. Secondly, I want to educate and teach and empower the youth what to do with their money, how to be financially literate, how to think about emotional and physical and mental health, how to think about their futures. Because these kids out here, they think they're lit because they got a Lambo and they're doing this, but they don't realize in 5 years you're going to be fucking shit. Because they're going to move on to a new platform. You're going to get older and young girls don't care about your stupid antics anymore. Or like, you know, you break your knee and you can't play football anymore or whatever it is. And like, no one thinks about that. They just think right. about the moment and how they're the shit. You know what I mean? And no one thinks about how to invest in their future. All those things, financially, mentally, health, you know, giving back, doing good and caring about people and doing the right thing. So it's a goal of mine within esports and gaming to teach these young kids that think they know better, that think because they became famous and they're making money and they're entitled little pricks online, that think that they're like gonna kill shit and that they're smarter than me because they're making maybe more money gaming right now than I am. Dude, the coach outlasts the player all the time. And I've been around for 20 years for a reason. I've watched rappers come and go, athletes come and go, influencers come and go, executives come and go because they're donkeys and they don't listen and they don't think about other people. They don't care about doing good business. They're not planning for failure. They're not planning on their future. They just think they're shit and they're living on the high of right now. And I think that's one of the keys of my longevity and my success too. If I was stock, I've been going up like this steadily my entire career because I'm very mindful of how I operate and how I treat people. And I'll lose money before I ever get my reputation or let somebody say he's an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, so I know you're from Boston. What was it like growing up, man? Because I can tell that the way that you're talking about the youth and trying to impact the future, that, you know, that your past must have influenced, you know, how you're treating your future. You know what I mean?
So I grew up with a single mom who worked two jobs. My dad was an alcoholic. He left us after I had watched him almost kill my mom. Then I was sexually abused for many years in my house. And I was very lonely, broke, lost kid. You know what I mean? I didn't know anything. Like, so I was exposed to everything that people have problems with in life. I was exposed to it since I was like 5 or 6. So like, you know, my mom had lesbians and gay guys like living and hanging at our house. You know what I mean? Like all my mom's friends were black. All the music I listened to was like black music. Like, so like all the things that some people have like was normal. Like I didn't even know anything different. Like matter of fact, I didn't even really know what white life was until I was 15 and my mom sent me to my dad in the suburbs because I was getting arrested too much for like robbing. And I moved out there. It was the first time I was like, oh damn, parents are together and the dad like owns a construction company and the mom drives to the football practice and like you go over to their house on Saturday and hang out and have fun. Like, what the fuck world is that? I don't know that world. I moved out to the suburbs. I'm thinking I'm going to go move with all headbangers and hicks that listen to heavy metal. Meanwhile, I'm like this wannabe like in the city wearing Adidas tracksuits. So like it was a big culture shock. One of the things I've said a lot was I was always like too white for the black kids and too black for the white kids.
Yeah.
Growing up, right?
Yeah.
Funny, I said that the other day, speaking about how you got to be mindful now, and a black woman was really offended that I said that.
Hmm. That's interesting because, like, you know, and DJ, I don't know if you felt the same way growing up, man, especially somebody who's biracial, right? But for me, and I think my brother feels the same way, right? Like, we grew up in suburbs, right, where generational wealth is everywhere, where in the black community and in the community you probably grew up in initially, nobody knows what generational wealth is. I mean, it's not a thing. Nobody talks about it because nobody knows what a trust is. All you know what trust is just how I feel about you, you know? So, like, I grew up in a predominantly white community, you just trying to fit in, just because, not because I wanted to be white, just because I wanted to have friends. You know what I mean? I'm trying to.
That's the thing. Like, even when I just used the phrase wannabe, I only use that because that was the social term they use. Yeah. But I didn't want to be anything. That's all I knew.
Right.
Yeah. So I didn't know, like, I'm supposed to be that, but I'd prefer to be this. That's just how I grew up. It's what I was exposed to. When I was young, I was like, is it okay for me to wear African medallions? Because, you know, when I'm listening to Public Enemy and X-Clan and KRS-One, that's what I love. Like, I learned more about Black life and Black history from just You Must Learn from KRS-One than I did my whole entire school history. You know what I mean?
You just mentioned my first rap concert ever, X-Clan. It was actually my first rap concert. And you know what, Harry, he reminds me so much of Pete. My best friend growing up, Pete, was basically, he was the only white guy around all Black guys. And we played hoops and, you know, whatever. But he always, it was this constant battle of, like, you know, he was more accepted by the Black community than he was even the white community. And they trying to understand him. And, you know, you're just trying to be like something. He's like, no, this is who I am. and actually, it's interesting. He's a teacher now. And his ability to be able to navigate through life, navigate with all different types of kids, is absolutely incredible. And he's given himself a competitive advantage because he embraced diversity very early on. And that's why I love the question that you had, Harry, because who you are is not a mistake. It's not like Harry said, success leaves clues. This is not by accident. And so you've left clues all along throughout your childhood to now that's made you who you are. And I'm so glad you're sharing that with the audience today.
You said that, you know, somebody, a Black woman, got upset with you when you said, you know, you talked about that kind of that idea of, you know, you were, you know, sometimes you're trying to fit in, whether it's Black community, white community, not Black enough, not white enough, whatever it was. Why do you think she got upset about that?
Well, first of all, she was super respectful of how she approached me. Mm-hmm. So it was on a DM.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She was like, I love what you had to say. The podcast is incredible that you're on. Thank you for sharing this. Mm-hmm. However, you know what I mean? Then she goes, this line, I didn't like it. And I think you should be mindful of when you say stuff like that, because it can be hurtful to some people. Because I think her point was, you're not Black, so you'll mm-hmm. never understand what it's like to be Black. So to say you were too Black for white people, you can't say that being a white person, because you will never know what it feels like to be Black. And I think that's what her point was, which I totally respect and appreciate. And we had a friendly back and forth, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said, totally wasn't trying to offend you. Here's what I meant by it.
Sure.
Where I grew up and how I grew up, this is what it was like. And she respected my response too. It wasn't like she was being super combative about it. She was just trying to respectfully maybe check me, you know what I mean? You know, we went back and forth and it was great. And I said, yo, much love. You know, I respect this and that. Thank you for sharing your feelings with me. But it was the first time anyone's ever showed me that was something that could be potentially bothersome to somebody.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change my truth. It doesn't change my fact. You weren't me. You didn't grow up where I grew up, and you didn't grow up in the time that I grew up.
That's right.
So you don't understand, because when the white kids would jump me, because in their mind, I was too Black. Whether a Black person says, well, you're not Black, it doesn't matter. To an ignorant white kid, I was acting too Black. Then you can say, what's acting Black? You know what I mean? Well, to an ignorant white person, listening to hip hop, talking with slang, you know, dressing a certain way. You know, let's not be assholes about this, guys. We're all human. We know what fucking goes on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to, like, pick it apart like I'm saying something wrong. This is my life and what I went through. I'm not saying it's worse, or I'm not saying I'm a certain thing. I'm showing and sharing what I went through, which is different than what you went through.
Right.
And I respect what you went through. Let's all just get along and realize dumb shit we all went through. And like, yeah, that was whack. Let's make sure no one else has to go through that shit again behind us.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, even I think about growing up, man, even just saying what's up. That was hood. Like, you know, and that's just so like the Black culture is now so intertwined into just American culture now. But you're right, in that snapshot of time, if you were doing anything, I mean, I remember there were radio stations. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio. The radio station in Toledo would play a song, but if it had like a rap, you know, like the rap version, or, you know, like a, you know, whatever, what am I looking at, a feature or a cameo, they would cut that out. They would cut that completely out on the station. You never could hear the rap, because they would not play any rap in that market. You had to try to get the Detroit station, I think it was 97.9, and try to pick that up in Toledo. So, yeah, you're so right about that. I have a question though. I saw something, Harry, when you were talking about, you mentioned kids, and I saw you light up, Clinton, when he mentioned kids early on. Tell us about it. Tell us a little bit about your family life, and you know, and what drives you at home.
Yeah, I mean, look at coming from the background I came from. All I ever wanted was a happy family, right? I just wanted love. I wanted to be loved and accepted. Growing up, I've never felt loved. And I never felt accepted. I was always super insecure. In fact, I still carry those traits now. Like, it's hard for me to realize if someone really loves me or not. Even my girl, like, I've recently had a conversation with her, and I said to her, I'm married. We've been together 5 years, right? It's still difficult for me to believe you actually really, like, really love me. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know you love me. I'm the father of your kid. I know you love me. I'm funny. I'm a good, you know, breadwinner. I'm a good companion. I know you love me. But like, in love with me?
Are you sure? Like, still?
So like, it's really hard for me to accept that. And you know, I'm working on it. But because you know why? Because and this isn't a woe is me thing. I'm just giving you an example why I feel this way. Because everyone leaves in the end, man. And it's just like, everyone lets you down. You know what I mean? It's like, just it's over and over and over. To the point, like, a couple years back, I was like, man, is anybody real? You know what I mean? Like, is anybody really real? And by the way, that's why I modeled myself to be the stand-up guy that I am, because I never want to make somebody feel the way other people made me feel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and I never want to let somebody down, and I never want to be the guy that hurt you. So yeah, I mean, I love my family, man. And like, I have a 18-month-old daughter. I have a 16-year-old son. And unfortunately, we just had a miscarriage a couple of days ago. That was really heartbreaking, and it affected me in a way that, look, I've been through a lot of shit in my life, right? And I'm the type of guy that's like, I lick my wounds and I'm okay the next day. I just move on. Okay. For some odd reason, like, man, I've been crying for 4 days. Yeah. Not to be sad about it, but like, I don't know why, like, it's so, like, affected me so much. I don't know, maybe I'm getting older.
Well, I mean, listen, dude, I mean, like, you know, DJ, I think DJ and I both have had a similar, similar challenge. I mean, my wife and I, Courtney, we lost one, you know, after telling folks about it, and it was like however many weeks, maybe 12 to 15 weeks in, you know, DJ probably, I think, has his own story, but like, yeah, that hurt, man. That hurt losing somebody that you haven't even met yet, you know? And all the excitement of finding out you're pregnant, and whether it's your first or your fifth or whatever, you know, it still hurts. And then also you look at your wife or your spouse, right? And then you're kind of feeling their pain as well. And so, listen, man, we can empathize with that for sure.
I don't even know the dude. And I'm upset.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, you know what though? Your pain is real, and it's yours. And you know, I think anytime that you're going through something like that, you embrace it, and also you got a wife too that is going through the same thing. Love on her as much as you can, man. Cause it's a difficult time. And I don't think, you know, there's no blueprint, there's no directions on how you grieve in that type of situation, you know. I think, but I think it's important to grieve.
Someone said that to me yesterday, and it brought everything to light. But you know what's funny, what we touched on is like, you know, we're three men, right, mm-hmm. that all have gone through our own adversities, and then we've all shared this in common, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I want to get to, like I said, I'm going to put out books like I put out mixtapes, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm really interested in, and that I'm going to tackle, and I'm already working on this book already, is about men and how, like, we've been, like, you know, we worry about everything else, like whether it's religion or race or gender or da da da. We're leaving the men behind. Like, there's no, like, you know how many, there's a huge community of men that are broken and hurt and traumatized and have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to cry. They're not allowed to cry because we've been trained to like suck it up. Don't be a little bitch. Get back on the field. Mm. You know what I mean? And it's like, man, there's a lot of men that are just fucking broken, which is why they go do dumb shit, or they look for love in the wrong place. Or, and I'm not making this an excuse for men, because a lot of men are dirtbags too, mm-hmm. but they go look for love and cheat because they're looking for something that they can't find, because all they've been told their whole life is like, you know, wipe up your tears, pull down your skirt, and, you know, get back in the game or run back on the field. And I think there's something to be said for, you know, especially our age group. Like we've never been able to go cry to anybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We always got to be the leader and the strong ones. And we got to show by example to our kids and lead our women and our jobs and on the football field and whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and if you ever break down, you look soft. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's whack. And it's like, I want to dive into that. I also want to dive into like how many men grew up without fathers, but then went on to become great fathers. I have a lot of celebrity friends that like had shitty past with no dad and then made it a point to become a great dad. Mm-hmm. Why? Like what happened that made them become everything their dad was not? You know, and the book I'm working on for that is called Thanks Dad.
I love that, man. I love that. And, you know, our fathers impact this man and 18-month-old and 16-year-old. I mean, like you're gonna impact them in so many ways. Whether you're there at every game, if you will, at every recital, or whatever, or if you're not there at all, it's just a matter of how you're impacting them. And so that's an interesting little case study. I'd be interested in reading.
I seen a quote this morning from Bruce Lee that said, "Instead of getting your kids all the materialistic things that you didn't have when you were young, which is what we all are a victim of, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you just teach them the things that you didn't know? And that's what I've been doing with my son. My son, I'm so proud of who my son is as a 16-year-old man. He's respectful of women. He's respectful of himself. He's such a great dude. And sometimes I look at him, and I'm trying not to pat myself on the back, but sometimes I look at him and I'm just like, man, what a dope dude. You know what I mean? Like like his friends will go to parties and like, you know, drink and do drugs. And he's like, I don't want to, why would I go there? And I'm like, because all your friends are there. He's like, yeah, that's whack. Like they're all drinking. And that's me. I was that kid. Yeah. I never drank. I never did drugs. I wasn't that kind of guy. I was just really focused on building and designing the life that I want to have one day. Mm-hmm. And I was focused, man. And I talk about all that in my book, guys.
I love it. We're going to make sure we get that out there, man. That's good. You know, Clinton, although, and I know Harry's got another question, but I want to mention your example that you lead. I think, you know, I have 5 children, right? So we had 3 miscarriages, didn't think we could have kids. We had our, you know, Shay is now 12. So ages 2 to 12, and they're constantly watching, right? I can say whatever I want to say, but like the example, if the way I treat Jessica, my wife, and the way my girls, my 3 oldest are girls, the way they see that, that's the way they're going to be expect to be treated. The way that I treat others and the way I lead, that's the way my sons will lead, you know? So it's your example. And so you should feel proud about that, brother, like that you're leading in a way where you're 16-year-old, because there's a lot of pressures for 16-year-olds right now.
It's funny because when me and his mother were getting divorced when he was 12, you know, I moved up the street. So me and him had our own place up the street. My son's my best friend, right? Cool. So I was never going to leave. I was like, man, I'll stay in hell until he's old enough to realize. Mm-hmm. Without getting into the stories of why what made him realize. And he actually said to me, Dad, I know why you got to leave now at 12, right? Yeah. So I ended up leaving. And then, you know, that whole first year, all his, damn it, I don't want to throw his mother under the bus. But I never say anything negative. Mm-hmm. I was never saying a negative about her. I never was making it a negative thing. I was always bringing the happy, right? And, you know, it wasn't the same on the other side. So what ended up happening is he realized a year later, oh, shit, my dad's actually the good guy. You know what I mean? Even though he was brainwashed to believe I wasn't for a year. And it was like, man, guys, like, I don't know if any of you went to a divorce or anything, but, like, it was the most, out of everything I've been through, molesting, being arrested, anything, that was the most stressful time of my life, because I thought I was losing. I lived in my car, I was homeless, and I built my life to have $1 million home, you know, a family, and it's all being taken from me, right? For no reason. Not because I went out and cheated, not because I did, for no reason. You know what I mean? Like, I was losing everything, and the most important thing that I felt I was losing was my son. Because in that tumultuous time, the way that she handled her anger was just by destroying me to him. Mm-hmm. And she had him all the time. So I couldn't combat that. And then inevitably, a year later, he called me and realized, yeah, Dad, I want to be with you. He says, come get me right now. I'm like, what are you talking about? Dad, just come get me. Got on a plane, went and got him, and he's been with me ever since. We had a giant, like, 2-year court battle. I won custody of him, and, like, it's been me and him ever since, and my new wife. You know, and this theory works at everything in life. You don't have to, like, shit on somebody else to lift yourself up. Just be dope. Mm-hmm. Your dopeness will float to the top. You know what I mean? Like, and by the way, helping others be great is also being great. Yeah. So you don't have to, like, shit on other people to be great. In fact, you can help those people. You know what I mean? And he's seen that. He would see, damn, my dad's so dope. Even when she's doing that to him, he's still being dope. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's, you know, and that's one of the things I think that made him realize, like, how to be, when you decide what kind of man you want to be and who you're going to be, you cannot let anybody or anyone's actions sway you off the path or the decision that you made or who you want to be. So when I decided I want to be a good guy, I don't care if you swear at me, yell at me, insult me, whatever it is, I'm always going to be the guy that I decided I'm going to be. And you're not strong enough to knock me off the path of who I am.
Right. I love that, man. I love that. You're dropping some bombs there, man. That's really good.
Again, can I get an amen? I feel like I'm going to the Church of Sparks right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. And slightly shifting gears and kind of taking back for a second. So, you know, I'm always curious when people kind of, you know, really make it big, and hell, your story's still being written, right? You know, literally in some cases, you know what I mean, as an author. But, you know, but like, what was that big break for you? Because somebody had to give you a chance along the way. Somebody, some individual, some group, some opportunity came that was really the catalyst. What was that for you?
Well, you know, at the sake of sounding pompous, I gave myself a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have any one big break. It was a series of smart decisions and calculated moves that I made on my own. And I could, again, I can go down a whole list to give you examples, but those are like, it's too long. But like, when I know I wanted to do something, I've never set a goal my entire life that I haven't accomplished. It's just never happened.
Yeah.
Why? Because one, I set a realistic goal. Two, I make a plan on how I'm going to get to that goal. And three, nothing's going to stop me from getting to that goal.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, somebody that's got nothing to do with me or helping me accomplish that goal. One example I like to use, I think I use it in my book, is if you're running down the field to the end zone to get a touchdown and somebody from the stands yells out an insult or something, you know, negative, do you throw the football down, stop running, and then run out to the audience and fight that person? No, that wasn't your goal. Your goal was to get to the end zone, and nothing, including that person, should take you off your aim of getting to that goal. In fact, if anything, it should be fueling you to get to that goal even faster. So I think a lot of people are easily thrown off their game from doubters or haters or obstacles that they feel are stopping them from getting to their own point. Well, people would imagine making it. I couldn't imagine not. So that really comes down to the mentality. So I don't even, what do you mean? No. All right. Well, you just don't understand. I'll figure it out this way. Like I never, and I'm not even saying that to be tough or cool. It's really who I've been my whole life. Like you say no. Okay. That means you just don't get how dope this is. I'll figure out another way. That's all it was. It was never, I never allowed one person to be the reason why I couldn't get to the goal I was trying to get to.
I love that. You know, one thing that you mentioned earlier, and you kind of you touched on a little bit here relative to goals, is like this, you know, that word preparation, right? Like preparation being really important. We talk about, you know, my brother says this a lot, the separations and the preparation, right? And so this is one, DJ, I don't know if you've seen or heard this story, but I saw it on the gram. I saw it on your Instagram, Clinton. So tell the audience and tell DJ about the story of when Diddy surprised you, right? And DJ SNS, right? In Vegas, in a battle and a challenge. Cause I thought the story you told there was pretty awesome relative to preparation. But like, tell us about that. Cause I think it's pretty dope.
Well, when you stay prepared, you don't have to get prepared.
Yeah.
All right. So that's pretty much what that story does. By the way, that's awesome that you went that far back.
I went back, man. I went back. But I've also been following you for longer than you know, for a bit. So, yeah, man.
So the story goes, we're in Vegas. And it was like all celebrities were there, Puff, Busta Rhymes, like everybody was there. Black Eyed Peas, Pussycat Dolls. Like this is like 2008. And out of nowhere, it was me and DJ SNS, who's a big time DJ from New York. Puff gets on the microphone. He goes, neither one of us knew he was going to do this. He goes, and the place was packed. When I say packed, I mean hood packed. And you know what that is, right? I mean, everyone's like this sweating.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
So he's like, yo, I got my two DJs here. He goes, well, I want to do something right now. I want to give them each 10, 15 minutes and see who can rock this crowd the most. And we're going to determine it by the audience. And I'm like, ah, gulp, right? I'm just like, come on, man. Like, so then he puts him on first, right? Now, I know what to do to make the whole crowd go crazy. And so does he. It's our job to evoke emotion. We know how to get it. I know how to start fights in the club. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I know what to play. Right. You know what I mean? I know what to say. So so he gets on, literally flies through like 30 seconds of every party banger you could think of. Like, to get the bass drop, to get into Hypnotize, into Party Up In Here, into everything you could play that the crowd would go crazy over, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck is left to play? Right? I'm like, I literally can't do anything, right? So, and as he does it, I'm sitting there and I'm paying attention, and then I'm assessing, by the way, this is part of my book, Knowing When to Pivot, right? Mm-hmm. And how to be prepared. So I'm watching the crowd, I'm like, we're in the West Coast. This is Vegas. I see a lot of dreads. That means there's a lot of Bay Area people in here. That means
E40.
Right? That means if I go hyphy and go West Coast, which he didn't do, all he did was play maybe a couple like Snoop and Dre, No Brainer, like classic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
But he didn't go in the way that if you're from here, you're gonna wild out, right? So he got off, the place went nuts. Then by the way, I'm probably like one of the only white people in this club, right? Like, I'm just this fucking white DJ and nobody knows. So I'm like, oh, fuck me. So I get on the mic and I purposely just kind of get wicked, like extensively long, because I wanted people to be like, this dude's choking, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I do it for like a good like whole minute. I don't know what the fuck this dude was doing before me. Da, da, da. And I just talked so much shit, right? And then I just went into like, boom, 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 boom. Dude, when I say the room was shaking, people were like, dude, I mean, people just swinging their dreads. Like, and I know that the East Coast guys aren't up on that shit like I am. Like, I'm up on everything,
yeah.
Right? Because I've been shaping and shifting culture for 20 years, so I know what's happening everywhere. I know these guys think that they're from New York. They think New York rules the world. So I'm out here with all West Coast people and Bay Area people. So I went up to Mac Dre, E40, Too Short. I'm playing everything that they don't even know what I'm playing. They're just like, what the fuck is this shit? But the crowd was going ham. Like, way more than they were for a year, right? And then I literally stopped the tour and said, dude, you can put that other dickhead back on. And then I walked away. And then, like, so then he tried. Everyone's like, oh, shit. Ah, right? So then he tries to get on the mic and just, like, just go at me, like, talking shit, right?
Yeah.
You know, probably just shit that's, like, unnecessary, right? And then Busta and Puff, like, literally, like, were manning up for me and standing up for me, because he was like going in, like, you know, probably like white corny DJ from Boston, da, da, like that type of shit. And Puff and Busta were like, Busta like got in his face. You don't ever disrespect Sparks like that. Da, 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 da. You know what's funny? Busta just called me this morning.
Oh, wow.
Hilarious.
I had to be prepared and know what else I could do to defeat my opponent. And I also had to know how to pivot, because if I went on there and just tried to like play the hot records differently than he played them, I would have looked whack.
Yeah, especially under pressure. You know what I mean? Because like pivoting under pressure, like the pressure adds a whole nother level to why the preparedness is important. You know what I mean? So I think the, you know, being prepared slows down the velocity of like a pressure situation.
I've always performed better under pressure. I'm not a preparer. Like even before I DJ gigs, I don't prepare.
Yeah.
Like, because by the way, why? I don't know what the temperature is going to be in the room. Uh-huh. I don't know what's going to happen. So, like, I might have to go a completely different way than what I prepared for. So I just wasted hours preparing.
But Clinton, you have though. That's the thing. You for years you've prepared. Like the I'm thinking about his story, Harry. And like, you know, we're talking about, you know, sales, right? You know, we train a lot of sales reps. They're never taking in their full environment. You looked in the crowd. You saw there were dreads. You looked at the clothes folks were wearing to see what region they were from. Then you matched it up with songs from that region to give yourself a competitive advantage in that situation. So you've prepared for years, and now you're tailoring and focusing your message, which is through music, to impact people. And that's an incredible story.
It really comes down to caring, right? Mm-hmm. So when you care other people and other people's mentalities and their fears, their dreams, their vulnerabilities, their goals and all those things, then you're fully aware. I mean, when I did sales, I was a beast. Like, I sold Kirby vacuum cleaners. My first week, I like broke records. And the reason why is because when I go into a room, I can tell from your body language to how you talk to how you dress. If I'm in your house, which gives me even more of an advantage, I understand your style. I understand what's important to you. I might see a kid's picture. I might see an old school rug. I might see that you need to update your countertops. So I understand what's important to you.
Yeah.
Most people want to hang around like-minded people because they want people to endorse their thoughts and ideas. Mm. How many times do you hang around with friends that you're like, yeah, da-da-da, he's an asshole. You know what I mean? Yeah, totally. You know, I don't want that. I want people that doesn't understand where I'm coming from because I want to understand why they're looking at it from a different point of view. I already know how to sell to me. If I want to know how to sell to everybody else, I got to think of how everyone else thinks that doesn't think like me. Yep. So that's why I have to listen and shut up and understand why everybody else thinks a different way than me. And that's the mark of a good salesman.
That's a book. That's a book, man. Is that book three? That's book three, right?
It's like, you know, rarely do you see leaders take the time to wonder or care about their employees. All they care about is the bottom line, the sales, about what his boss thinks about him. But guess what? The more you care and empower and support and love the people that are under you, that are there to help you look better, the better they're going to perform, the better tools you can give them to perform better for you. It's just like a good coach. You know what I mean? Why are players get better? You have a better coach that understands what you're going through, especially a coach that actually was a player before. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So like, I've lived 10 lives already in my life. So I know every personality. I know from religion to culture to race to economics to, you know, geographic. Like, I understand and I relate and I care. So that's why I'm able to persevere and continue to move forward and do well by others and build businesses and build people at the same time.
Yeah. That's powerful, man. That's awesome. Good stuff. So, hey, Harry, what do you think, man? We get him to the rapid fire?
Yeah, man. Speaking of fire, that was fire, then. Thanks for spending time with us, man. That was really awesome, and I'm looking forward to even just listening back to this stuff and hearing, you know, kind of just soaking it up, man. Really good stuff. Before you go, we had a couple of rapid fire questions for you, you know, just to kind of, you know, close this thing out and make it light and fun. So hopefully you're ready for these, man. So I'm curious, like, what is there a record you wished you produced or wrote that you didn't, that you weren't on?
No, I don't have regrets and I don't have wishes and I don't have like, I don't wish. If I want to do something, I want to get something done, then I do it. But if I could ever be part of something, Bohemian Rhapsody, what a fucking amazing record, especially at the time. Nobody was down with that shit. At the time, you know what I mean? Who would even think of that shit at the time? Like, what an incredible mind Freddie Mercury had.
Yeah.
And that's like, even in my music career, Freddie Mercury was huge role model, an inspiration for, like, who gives a shit what anybody else thinks? Just make what's in your mind and in your heart. And the right people will find it and like it.
Yeah, that was a good movie, by the way. I like that movie. Person you would like to meet. You've met, it seems like you've worked with everybody. Who's somebody you'd like to meet or work
again,
with?
I don't have like this list of like wishes and like, if I want to work with somebody, I figure out a way to work with them.
Okay, let me reframe. You know, who's somebody that you worked with, that you have worked with, and you were surprised by like how dope they were.
If anything, I've been surprised that people weren't as dope as we thought they were. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we won't call anybody out on that one. So,
wow, yeah.
So take me to Boston.
They were like, oh, so you actually suck, and it's people around you that are dope.
Yeah. So take me to Boston. If I'm visiting Boston, like, where's a place I have to eat?
right outside of Boston is my favorite restaurant. It's called Tassos, and it's a Greek restaurant in Norwood, Massachusetts, which is like, you know, 30 minutes outside of Boston. It's right at the Norwood Airport. So if you're a baller, you can fly right into that private Norwood Airport and go to Tassos because it's literally right there. Tassos is my favorite restaurant. But if I want to like bring some visitors when I'm in Boston out to dinner and not drive 30 minutes away, we probably go somewhere in the North End, Little Italy, and eat. There's so many restaurants there that are great.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, dude, last thing, where can people find you, man, that aren't already following you and you know, give us the name of that book one more time and where we can go to buy that thing.
Well, all socials are at Clinton Sparks. If you want to see the businesses that I own and the history of me, music I'm a part of, all those things, ClintonSparks.com. And if you want to improve your life or you want to win big in the music business or in your life, my book, How to Win Big in the Music Business, is at winbiginmusic.com, winbiginmusic.com. Or if you just go to my socials, the link is in my bio. At Clinton Sparks is my socials, and it's also at ClintonSparks.com. Get familiar.
Hey, Matt, listen, it has been such a pleasure, brother, meeting you, hearing your journey. You have so many more years to impact people, and I love where your heart is at. You start with people first, and you're just going to continue to have a profound impact on folks. So thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I want to do this on the air. Will you come back on the show, man? We've never asked me to come back twice. There were so many nuggets in there. I could talk to you for a whole nother hour or two. So would you come on again?
Yeah, of course. I'd love to.
Awesome. You've been listening to the Room Tilters podcast. If you love it, do us a favor and rate us. Write us a review and share it with a friend. We appreciate you, our listeners, and remember, you don't have to be sick to get better.